The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with SuperValue Travel Insurance. Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance online at supervalue.ie.
Yeah, which one do you prefer? Oasis or Blur?
Blur.
What?
Oasis, I mean Oasis.
It's not often that we have two of Britain's most exciting young vibrant bands battling it out.
Now it's an all-out battle for the top.
Sounds like war to me.
They're the two most popular bands in Britain, having sold millions of records, and they're currently engaged in a chart war.
Not since the Rolling Stones took on the Beatles has there been such a serious rock and roll rivalry.
But there's only one band that can get to the top spot. All will be revealed on Sunday's Top 40.
A serious rock and roll rivalry. That must be the BBC. The halcyon days of the summer of 95 were looking at the height of Britpop when the infamous rivalry between Blur and Oasis hit its peak as both fought it out for the coveted number one spot in the UK singles charts. That's when the UK singles charts used to mean something. Of course, Blur and Oasis aren't the only music acts to have squabbled so bitterly in the full glare of the record buying public. And Roisin Dwyer, commissioning editor of Hot Press, is here to tell us about some of the less savoury ones, let's say. Roisin, welcome to the programme. Blur, Oasis, 20 years ago this summer. Can't believe it's been that long. Remind us first of all what happened between the two of those.
Well, yes, 1995, it doesn't seem that long ago. This was the height of Britpop. Blur and Oasis were the two best-selling bands of the genre, and they couldn't have been more different. Oasis, led by two mouthy northerners, Liam and Noel Gallagher. Blur, they met at art school, very effete, middle class. So I think the media played a big role in stirring up this storm, but they were the two best-selling bands, so there was bound to be a bit of rivalry in the camps. Alan McGee, Oasis' label boss, fondly remembers Damon coming to a party for when some might say the Oasis song became number one, and Liam Gallagher going over and saying into his face, you know, we're number one, you're not, we're number one, you're not. Liam meant it. He wanted there to be a rivalry. Damon thought it was a game, and things proceeded from there. But they just went for tit for tat, the tabloids. They loved bigging it up, the rivalry between the two bands. It all came to a head in August 1995 when Blur and Oasis received released their two new singles on the same day, Blur's Country House and Oasis' Roll With It. Blur won that battle. I think they sold over 50,000 more singles than Oasis, but the next year I think Oasis got
their
revenge.
Album of the decade.
So I mean, it was just made for great tabloid fodder, and the rivalry has continued on, some would say.
Some might say indeed.
But, yes.
Having said that, didn't they go out for a pint recently?
That's it. Noel Gallagher said, you know, I bumped into Damon, I think this was a few years ago, and you know, we went for a pint and had a laugh about at all. And then in 2013, when Noel Gallagher curated the Teenage Cancer Trust, he and Damon and Graham Coxon from Blur performed Blur's Tender as part of the proceedings.
Right.
Also, Damon said on a Newsnight interview a couple of years ago, when he was questioned about it, that he thought Oasis were the better band. So he seemed to have buried, they all seemed to have buried the hatchet.
No, wait a minute. I don't think he said the better band. He said something very kind of like, oh, wait a minute, it's still simmering. He said, better band, they were the better band at presenting themselves to the public, which is not saying a better band.
Yes.
Damon's not going that far.
Well,
anyway, hold on a second. Like, Blur are still touring, obviously, and they've got a new album out for the first time in a long time, and they're playing this coming weekend at the Electric Picnic in Strabilly in County Laois. And the Gallagher brothers, they went their separate ways. Have they in any way at all? Like, there's been some contact this year, even if it's only by Facebook.
Absolutely. Liam tweeted a backstage pass of his pass to go and see Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds and said, oh, keeping it in the family. So that all seemed very amicable. But then there's been more Twitter spats. Liam taking to Twitter saying he busted Noel because he admitted in an interview that he had been plotting his solo career when Oasis were still going. So it's on and off. But you have to think, you know, are they getting on like a house on fire behind the scenes and just using the media to keep themselves in the spotlight?
Well, I'll tell you one thing, like, no matter how good some of the music is on the Noel Gallagher side of things at the moment, which a lot of it is very good with the second album out of the High Flying Birds, etc., they will come back, won't they? There'll be some kind of reunion. They'll headline Glastonbury and they'll make their 20 million in one night or whatever it is.
I think they will.
Okay, that's that then. Just what about the other musical act spats, if I can call them that? Guns N' Roses and Nirvana, what was that one?
Yeah, Yeah, that was an odd one because it started out, like, Axl was a big fan of Nirvana. Now, obviously, the appreciation was not returned. I think you can actually see him wearing a Nirvana hat in the Guns N' Roses video, Don't Cry. But he did offer them a support slot on the Use Your Illusion, Guns N' Roses Use Your Illusion tours. He was turned down. He did then the rivalry sort of began simmering. And, you know, he did say in concert in 1992, Kurt Cobain is an effing junkie and has a junkie life. And he was quite open about his dislike of Kurt, as was Kurt of his dislike for Axl, because Kurt was a visionary, a feminist, very PC, and Axl to him represented everything he hated. It did come to a head in the 1992 MTV VMAs when Kurt and Courtney, who had just had the young Francis, saw Axl passing at one point and sarcastically asked him to be the godfather to their child, and he turned on them. But I think that was sort of the height of it, but they did not get on.
Sure, Axl is just controversy personified.
Absolutely.
And has been since day one.
Yes.
The feuds as they happen and whatever, it really is mostly to do with the stirring of the press, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. But it's them stirring. I mean, they've great raw material to work with. You know, musicians are, you know, what is it? Low self-esteem, massive egos. You know, it's natural. They're naturally competitive animals. So there's great raw material for the press to work with.
Here's a text at 51551, Roisin. It says, describing Blair as a feat is a little harsh. Check the dictionary, ? Says Thomas and Leitrim. I think it's in relation to the difference between, you're just trying to show the difference between them and Oasis.
Yes, exactly.
Bit of a difference. They're the lads.
Yes.
Okay. Neil Young, he upset Leonard Skinner, of course. Criticism of the Deep South. A lot of people look at the song from the After the Gold Rush album, Southern Man. But there's more.
Yeah, this has been, I think, very misunderstood over the years. Neil Young, of course, he in his music, he sort of attacks, I think, the South and its history of racism. Lynyrd Skynyrd, very proud of their Southern roots,
yeah.
Celebrated that in their song Sweet Home Alabama, took a little jokey pot shot at Neil. You know, I hope Neil Young will remember.
Southern man, don't need him around.
Anyhow. Yeah. Now, this all seems that they were warring rivals, but apparently behind the scenes they had great respect for each other. Ronnie Van Zant wearing a Neil Young t-shirt on the cover of their 1997 album, and Neil Young himself admitting in later years that he had covered the song himself in his own, you know,
Yeah, but in Alabama, you got the weight of the rest of the union to help you along. What's gone wrong? It's that he still gets the dig in. Miley Cyrus, Sinead O'Connor had issues. Actually, you see Miley last night on the video awards last night, and the pictures she was sending out, shocking people around the world once
shocking
again.
Shocking people.
Twerking from 2 years ago is nothing.
Yes, indeed. When will she learn? Never, it seems. So, yes, a few years ago, Miley came out and said how Sinead O'Connor's video for Nothing Compares to You was a big influence on her video for Wrecking Ball.
What do you mean by big influence, I wonder? I've seen both and I go, what?
Yeah.
Where are we getting this from?
I think she was trying to maybe convey her admiration for Sinead as an artist, but it badly backfired when Sinead drafted an open letter to Miley voicing her concern, saying that she was basically being pimped by the music industry. Mm. But the letter was, you know, Sinead signed off. This is, you know, I'm saying this with motherliness and with love. Miley did not take well to this. She came back and comparing Sinead to troubled actress Amanda Bynes, tweeting screen grabs of Sinead's tweets from a few years ago when she had been at a low ebb looking for help for her bipolar disorder. Sinead then came back at that, saying, taking me on is even more effing stupid than behaving like a prostitute and calling it feminism. So the wars continued.
And the tweets were a few years old that Sinead did point
yes,
out that,
yes,
that Miley was really taking things out of context.
Yes, absolutely. But Sinead continued to post letters. Well, at first she was being motherly and caring, and then she went on the attack. But, I mean, perfectly understandable.
One of Sinead's ones, great. Does anybody know the whereabouts of this girl's parents?
Yes, that was a year later. Yeah. She reignited the feud when Miley Cyrus, there was a photo of her posing, like looking a bit like a stripper, one would say, with a mouthful of dollar bills. And yeah. Sinead posted, urgent, does anyone know the whereabouts?
It's a funny
of
one in terms of like,
parents.
And today being Van's birthday and all that, if you think about it in terms of just like the reverence he has for the blues from the past and how he's used it in his own music, or the music from the past. I mean, like, you would think Keith Richards and Chuck Berry might actually get on really well in one way, you know, regardless of how much kind of plagiarism or stealing might have gone in terms of the riffs. But actually, Chuck doesn't like Keith.
No, Chuck is a bit of a fiery individual, and he has there was a reputation of him being extremely difficult to work with. But Keith tells a great story when being backstage at a Chuck Berry gig, and when Chuck went to collect his money or whatever he was doing, Keith spotted his guitar in its guitar case and couldn't resist, took the guitar up to give it a try. Chuck comes back, finds him, says, "Nobody touches my guitar," and punches him in the face.
And the reason, a lot of it is the fact that, like, Chuck Berry, etc., would have made all this sort of stuff famous, but the person who made the trillions out of it is the Stones, etc., the white guys.
Well, that's it. And Chuck's in the famous film 1987's Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll about Chuck. He voices his anger towards Keith and the Stones and a wave of other British bands for basically stealing
but
his
riffs.
But
then again, of course, who inducted Chuck Berry into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
It was Keith, wasn't it?
It was Keith Richards. Yes, yeah, there you go.
But you could argue Chuck stole the riffs as well. It all goes back through time. Music is all borrowed anyway.
Yeah, but wasn't there one in terms of one of those movies, the Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll, where he just kept playing really loud. And Chuck kept playing really loud and just annoyed Keith. And Keith said, "Hey, turn it down." And of course, he wouldn't turn it down. So maybe that's still going. Bob Geldof, who's playing also this weekend at the Electric Picnic.
Yes,
the Rats
they're
are back.
Celebrating their 40th anniversary this year.
Yeah, cover of Hot Press this week. They fell out with Paul Weller.
Rivalry, of course. Bob Geldof, frontman of the Boomtown Rats, and Paul Weller at the time was the frontman of the Jam. Bob has said there was a great rivalry between the bands, but then of course came Band Aid, and Bob had to think about being the better man and inviting Paul Weller to take part. And he said, you know, to my great dismay and his great credit, he accepted. But apparently Paul Weller he didn't accept immediately. He had to take a while to have a
think about dismay it. And credit, in other words, I would never have thought that Paul Weller would have actually gone for that at that time.
Well,
but of course he was style cancelling then, all that angry Jam stuff as well.
Yeah, and Geldof said no, well, he obviously had to think about, you know, the cause, what they were trying to do, and accepted. Yes.
Here's one of 5-1-5-5-1, All the Young Dudes by Bowie for Martha Hooper was mocking T-Rex and Bolan. Yeah, I wonder if is mocking the right word anyway. Whereas they were best mates. Man, I need TV when I got my T-Rex, etc. Or when I got T-Rex, etc. So any feuds you can see maybe happening in the future? Anything on the horizon?
Gosh, well, I mean, you do wonder what'll happen when Johnny Marr's autobiography comes out. Yes, comes out next year. And will Moz have anything to say about it? As Moz has something to say about nearly everything.
Moz being the lead singer, Morrissey's, he's bringing out a book of fiction soon, and he's already got his autobiography out.
Yes,
and
also Johnny Marr's. The Lost,
are you
arrives
saying
on September
that
24th.
Johnny Marr's autobiography might be a little bit kind of sort of disparaging towards his lead singer?
I think, well, Johnny is a very, very pleasant gentleman. I don't think he will go all guns blazing trying to stir anything, but I just think Morrissey is so sensitive that I think he could take great umbrage at anything
so
he perceives as a
watch
slight.
This space. By the way, did you see the recent Twitter exchange between Zayn Malik, as in One Direction, and Calvin Harris?
Exactly quite happened there? An unusual one, because it was actually Zayn Malik retweeting a post which sort of mashed two tweets together. Taylor Swift's commenting on Spotify that Taylor Swift obviously is not on Spotify and she believes music has an inherent value. Then Miley Cyrus in a separate tweet comments on how album sales are not important to her, that she has made her money and she's happy and music should be free, or sentiments to that effect. So those two texts were placed together and retweeted. Zayn Malik retweeted it. Calvin Harris, boyfriend of Taylor Swift, took great umbrage at someone, what he perceived to be his missus, being shown as being greedy. Basically a spat between him and Zayn Malik ensued when Calvin jumped to Taylor's defence, saying, you know, oh, you've made your money, cool, yeah, you know, F the 99%.
Oh, for crying out loud, sort it out.
And it went on and on. But hilariously, what I love is the fact that, you know, with Zayn Malik saying to Calvin Harris, you know, clearly you didn't understand. Calm yourself. Don't get your knickers in a twist before your dentures fall out. Calvin Harris is 31, Zayn Malik 22.
31, ancient in other words. By the way, today we mentioned that it is Van Morrison's birthday. So if you're listening, Van, happy birthday.
Yes.
We'll play a tiny little bit. Just give us a few seconds. Why not? Let's go right to the one he makes no money from. Brown-eyed girl it is, and he was so ripped off in the early days. One of the things where he makes no money on, no matter how much it's played in the radio, and believe me, it's played in the radio an awful lot in the States in particular. Can you believe that he's 70? I'm like, he's a huge career. Any highlights?
70. I'm a huge fan of them, the garage blues rockers he was in before he became known as the solo legend that was Van Morrison. And them, of course, great success, wonderful song, Gloria. But when they toured the States in 1966, they had a three-week residency in the Whiskey A Go-Go. And for the third week, their support band was The Doors. And I remember when
the house band. Did you see the Observer yesterday? A full page on the Whiskey and the Doors.
But when I interviewed Ray Manzarek, sorry to name drop, but
hold on, I interviewed him not only in this studio, and he played piano with all his answers. He's a real talker, that guy.
He is a real talker, but he remembered fondly one night them all up on stage doing a rendition of Gloria, and Ray, you know, he was quite a spiritual dude. Him talking about, you know, Jim Morrison, Van Morrison, you know, Irish cousin. Cross time.
Yeah, that sounds like Ray, alright. Yeah. By the way, I know you're a major fan of the band, as in Bob Dylan's band, the band, or else the band on their own, whatever you want to call them, Robbie Robertson, etc. The 1976 movie of Martin Scorsese, Van stole the show.
Van stole the show in his garish velvet jumpsuit, doing performing Caravan and dancing like an embarrassing drunk uncle at a wedding.
He was brilliant.
He was amazing. Sorry. But the funny thing is, at the end of that clip, when Van exits the stage, Robbie Robertson, you know, in tribute to him, says Van the Man, and that's where it came from. The band named him Van the Man.
Just one other thing, have you got any good other Van story at all?
You must know Van
the
stories,
Liam Fay
I'm
one
afraid.
Is great.
I haven't been able to get in contact with Liam Fay to clarify the details. Liam Fay, please call in.
Did he end up chasing him down the street or something?
They didn't get on. I think when he went.
Any other big music stories hitting the hot press desk as we speak?
Well, we're all really looking forward to Electric Picnic next weekend. We have our chat room there doing
interviews
with artists.
Chat room,
yes, and Bob Geldof is popping in for a chat. Churches, Ride are calling in, Soak, loads of people coming in for chats and sessions, and of course Blur headlining. So
we'll do a little bit of that now. Good luck with your Hot Press weekend at the Electric Picnic. Thanks a million, Roisin.